Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So on the way over here, I stopped at the coffee shop and got a coffee. As I was on my way in, I held the door open for a stranger who was carrying some coffee. It just looked like they were going to have a hard time pulling. It was, you know, they would have had to pull the door, and they had one of those trays of coffee or whatever. So I held the door open for them. And, man, I felt really good about that. Felt very good about that. What I had just done.
That is a big thing you did. You might have changed that person's life, Dave.
Well, I had to stop what I was doing and think about them for like, you know, a quarter of a second. And I had to move my arm in a certain way.
There you go.
But it felt very altruistic.
There you go. Altruism. It's an interesting example because I think it gets to the heart of the problem with altruism. And in your story, you said it made me feel really good.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I think most people, when they believe they're doing altruistic behaviors, they're really not. They're doing things because it makes them feel good.
It's
the intentionality behind the action for altruism specifically, I believe, is very important.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to pick that apart. So I think what you said is partially correct and partially incorrect. I'll say this. I believe intention behind altruistic acts matters. But I think altruistic acts make you feel good.
Yeah.
So I think you can separate those two things. I don't think you can say, well, if they do it in order to feel good, then it's not a truly altruistic act. No, I think all altruistic acts make you feel good. And some people just devote more of their lives and at a greater expense to themselves than others, regardless of whether or not they get that emotional reward or not.
Yeah, I guess it just – for me, it just goes back to the intent. If you're doing the action because you know it makes you feel good and that's why, I don't view that as altruism, personally.
Yeah, okay.
I'm helping this guy
out. I can pick that apart.
Not because of him. Fuck that guy. But it makes me feel good. And then I can share what I did with somebody.
I mean, you got people who have devoted their lives to like service. And the reason they did it was because it makes them feel good. They feel like that's their calling, that's their purpose, and they do. That I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Yeah. I'm just saying we jumped ahead. How do you define altruism?
Yeah. So I picked this one. It's a Merriam-Webster one because it has a certain word in it, and it's the first word. It defines altruism as unselfish regard or devotion to the welfare of others.
Right. And so in all of our examples, they're not unselfish. They're self-centered. They're literally self-centered. I'm doing it because I'm serving myself because it makes me happy. The pursuit of happiness is a rational pursuit.
Well, and that's where that's where I'll go back and say that
disagree there.
Yeah, you have to pick apart what intention from feeling good. Like I was just saying, look, if your intention is pure and you feel good,
yeah, then cool, 100%. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
The opening the door is a good example. You don't get reward from that. Most people aren't going to go share that story with anyone. Sure, they get a little bit of serotonin bump because they're like, oh, I'd like somebody to do that for me if I'm in their situation. Like, yeah, that's a good example. I think we could split hairs academically and say, well, that's actually just cooperation, but it doesn't matter. I agree with that. But
yeah.
Here's where I'm going. I believe there's a difference in my life, I define selfless service versus selfish service. Selfless service for me is in the trenches, serving others. And of course, I get a bump because it can make me feel good, but it's because doing work that's necessary and important and not advertising it at all, not putting it out publicly, not sharing it with others, not putting it on a resume. That to me is the most pure form of altruism that exists, where you're truly trying to serve others to help them or share your knowledge. That's not what we do in this country. We do selfish service. We do resume service. We do let's sit on boards because that's the formula for service. And buddy, I think that ain't service at all, other than trying to serve ourselves.
Yeah, it's what's the term? Virtue signaling, right?
It's not even that. It's an example of lack of thinking. The majority of people at our age, in your 30s and 40s, the formula is find something that interests you. Get on a board. I'm on boards. People don't do shit on boards. They don't serve. They don't do anything. They go to meetings and get free food. They don't contribute. They don't speak up. So that to me is not only not a form of service, it's a form of pure selfishness because it makes them look good for their industry or their profession.
Okay. That makes total sense to me. That makes total sense to me. Well, and obviously, like, I'm not going to argue that there's not a whole subset of quote unquote altruistic acts that are done just to pad a resume or, you know, be publicly displayed to show how great of a person you are.
That's a good phrase, yes. Right?
Because there are. But as you were going through that and saying, well, in this country, when we do altruism, you know, or when we do altruistic acts, we do it with selfish intentions. And then you gave those great examples. I was like, well, okay, like let's take the devil's advocate route of that and say you can't do an altruistic act without it being self-serving.
Yeah. Again, to me, it's the proportionality of the feeling you get. It's you need to come to terms with your intentionality. That's AA, man. Like that's just like why are you doing the action? Why am I serving as a big brother? Is it for me? Because it makes me feel good, or am I truly trying to help somebody else out? You have to look at where that needle is, and you can only have that personal conversation with yourself.
Yeah, and yes. Where I was going with that is I would think that if you talk to – I don't want to call – there are some people that I think would take the position that any altruism is really just meant to help yourself in some way, like game theory, right? Like from a evolutionary and survival perspective, like, no, we would never help another if it truly didn't help us in some way. And so where I'm going with this, I think a good example is the book that we're reading or that I'm listening to, that you've read and you turned me on to, Sapiens. By Nicholas Nassim Taleb.
No, Sapiens is by Yuval Noah
Harari. Sorry. Harari. Just saw a tweet by Taleb.
Also a good writer. But not an altruistic person.
No. Yeah. So, Noah Yuval Harari. In that book, Sapiens, he talks about, you know, basically the desire to have our genes carry on. And that we are a social species. And he talks about how babies are born in a helpless state. And there are entire societies where it's unknown who the father is. And that, you know, obviously that in history, that was a common thing where a woman would have many male mates. No one would really know who the father was. And so multiple men in the tribe would raise the baby as if it were theirs. And you would be like, oh, wow, well, that's altruistic. You don't know if that's your son or your daughter. But really, it was in order to survive, you know, make sure that your genes get passed on because there's a chance that it was your genes, right? So That's what I'm saying. I'm taking the whole like game theory of like, well, it's, and there's reciprocal expectations, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if I help somebody, I've got a check mark in the, I helped them. And now whenever I get into trouble, I can count on them mm-hmm. to help me, right? You've got these.
That's not altruism.
Well, you've got these skeptical people that will say all altruism is boils down.
Right. And I just, one yeah, of these I, I'm not yeah. saying that, right. but I agree with your point.
Right. I was trying to take the, when I say I'll take the devil's advocate viewpoint and where you're saying, well, in today's world, you know, or in the U.S. today, we do this just to pad our resumes. And I was going to take that cynical view of, oh, yeah, well, that's the only reason we ever do altruism.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. If altruism is defined as a selfless action that benefits others, my only critique with that, it's because it, I think we've just come to the point that it can't be purely selfless because we do get a bump from it, or else why are you doing it?
Yeah.
You know, and there's different degrees, right? There's, you can go live with the poor and the indigent, like Mother Teresa. Very few people go that far. Or you could drop off a bag of soup cans at a kitchen, right, on the other end. And both of those, you're going to feel good about it. So my only critique to that definition would be a self-reduced action that benefits others. Reduce your thinking of yourself, because you're still going to feel good about it, but it's not about you. The action's about the outcome for the other person.
Yeah, there's some importance there. There is absolutely some importance there.
And
what you said.
The other thing I took from Albert Pujols, the great slugger and former Cardinal and future Hall of Famer, he was getting interviewed years ago, 20 years ago probably, about a game. He hit a home run to win the game, I think. And the interviewer then brought up his foundation. And he cut her off mid-sentence. He's just like, I don't want to talk about that. And she's just like, what? And he's just like, that's not what this interview's about. It cheapens the foundation if I just try to talk about the foundation all the time. I'll never forget that. It cheapens my foundation. She's like, oh, it's a chance to plug your foundation. No, it cheapens it. That's not the purpose of this conversation. It was awesome, man. It was philosophical. That was altruistic, framing his own foundation that way. And we have gone so far the other way. Everything is just, oh, tweet it out, share it out. Oh, you donated to GoFundMe. Make sure everybody knows you donated to it. And I just have a problem with that. I don't like it. It feels dirty and sticky and salesman-like, and I don't view that as altruism.
So I think you're hitting on something that I was going to get to in a different way, right? I was going to tie together what we just talked about. Like they said there's I don't know if it was in this Psychology Today article or there's Very Well Mind thing that I was reading. Anyway, one of the sources that I was reading in preparation for this put together groups of altruistic acts, kind of trying to classify them. And it was doing it by the route that I was going down, saying, okay, so when we talked about altruistic behavior in tribes in order to pass down your genes, that's genetic altruism. And people are more likely to help close family members even today because we've evolved in order to do that. So they called that genetic altruism. And then they said altruism with expectations of that to be returned in the future, that's reciprocal altruism. And then they said based on group affiliations, you know, trying to help the group that you identify with. That's group-selected altruism. But then there's this category that they called pure altruism. Mm-hmm. And the reason I want to talk about that is because in your story of Albert Pujols, you talked about it being a philosophical choice. And it's like everything we always come back to. Like his choice to do that was motivated by his internalized values, mm-hmm. right? And his morals and his internalized values. So he was valuing some of his internalized beliefs and principles ahead of monetary benefit for his foundation, publicity for his, you know, you get what I'm saying. So you, I think what you were saying, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, is that you respected the fact that he acted in accordance with his values.
In a principled way. He was aligned with his principles and values there. And it was tough. It was so odd. No one does that. No one. Name another example of where that's occurred in the history of our country. I can't think of any.
I mean, it happened.
Right. But the point is we can't just, it's the exception to the rule.
Well, and I think that's the point of it is that it is unnoticed.
It's rare.
No, I mean, I don't think it's rare. I think unnoticed. It's unnoticed.
Okay, good point.
Yeah,
good point.
I think it happens all well, others, the time.
Yeah, and people don't have a microphone. They're not in Pujol's public position as well. They don't have a microphone in their face, the opportunity to do that.
Well, and it's almost like this. I think about this whenever I do something altruistic, and it doesn't even matter how small it is. It's been very, very small things lately where oftentimes it goes unnoticed. Maybe by anyone other than me, even the person that I do it for, maybe not, doesn't notice it. And it's so it's difficult to not be like, look what I did. I did this for you, you know?
Yeah, that's the ego.
Yeah. And so that's, just for me, that's the baby step that I've been.
Yeah, I like that.
Lately.
That's interesting, though. That let's unpack that a little bit. Is it an altruistic action if the other person doesn't even know they're benefiting from
right?
it?
Right, right.
I don't know.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, give an example of one. It doesn't have to be you, just an example.
Oh, damn. Okay. And we're going tiny here, right? But not taking the last donut in the kitchen, right? Like, you want it. You could easily take it. It's delicious, and you're still hungry, right? But you see somebody coming down the hall, and you see that they haven't gotten a donut this morning. And so you let it leave it for them.
Nice. Okay.
And they never know that you even did it. They just think that there was still a donut there, right?
Okay, like, I like that. Nobody That's good. That's it. A great example.
Yeah. Little things like that, right? And
what about giving money?
And now do you do this? Do you stick around and say, hey, I saved this right, last exactly. donut for you?
Hey, that was me, bro.
Hey, check this out. Yeah, these donuts are great. Why don't you have this last one?
That removes the altruistic action, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
What about giving homeless people money?
Yeah, that one's interesting. That one's interesting. I think if it's just purely for the intention of helping them, then yes, yes, that's good. It's good.
Well, what would the other intention be?
Well, you know, there's the whole like, at what point are you doing it to make yourself feel good? And
well, it gets back to my point about intentionality.
Yeah. And I mean, in that instance, I don't think that one qualifies because the homeless guy recognizes you're giving him money immediately. Mm-hmm. So at least one person recognizes the altruistic act.
I think the most altruistic thing to do would be to spend time with the person, talk to them. Are you hungry? Let's go get some food. A family friend of ours, before he had kids, he used to take homeless people back to his house and let them shower, and he'd have a meal with them and then take them back somewhere else. That, my friend, is altruism. He didn't publicize that. I only learned that through his wife.
Yeah, no. That's definitely...
That's, again, more extreme, but it's awesome.
That's awesome. No. It's awesome. It's funny, like, when we talk about this because... There's this thing that I used to do when I was younger. I don't necessarily do it nearly as much anymore. But I used to like think about all the things that were in my life that other people didn't see. Things that I was proud of or whatever, right? And I would always like think in my head, I wonder if our lives are like a movie, right? And we're like this character. It's kind of like the Truman Show. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like Truman would have been unable to do an altruistic act that went unnoticed because the whole world's watching. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that way, I was like, yeah, you know, some of these good things that you do that nobody notices, whatever, you know, somebody's got to be watching. This movie's got to be playing somewhere. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And, well, that's the point of God.
Well, that's the idea of thinking, well, God is omniscient, all knowing, omnipresent. You know, like he's the one watching the movie.
So that's a bigger point I want to make.
OK. All right.
Let's imagine you have an uncle and this uncle's a devout Catholic. He goes to church 5 times a week, serves every service function you could imagine, feeds the poor every week. Basically, he's racking up lots of actions on St. Peter's guide to make sure he gets into heaven. So everything that person's doing is tied to the notion that it should be done to help me get into afterlife. Is that altruistic? See, your movie is being played upstairs. So, I mean, that's a whole nother. And I'm not saying all religious people think that way. There are certainly some that do.
If you read this, what they said pure altruism is, it says, this form involves helping someone else, even when it is risky, without any reward. It is motivated by internalized values.
So,
and morals.
Getting afterlife is like the greatest reward.
Yeah.
So then you'd have to say it's not altruistic behavior.
Yeah.
So somebody serving others.
Well, it's not pure altruism. It's not pure.
You see where
altruism.
I'm getting at, though? Oh, that's a real minefield of problems for people. People would really not like that.
Oh, no. People would definitely not like that. Yeah. Why else would you?
I personally think it is altruistic. Unless while you're doing each of those small acts of service, you, at the forefront of your brain is literally, help me get into heaven. Help me get into heaven. If you're that person, you're a fucking sicko.
Yeah.
But if it's just kind of been internalized to you from the time you've grown up through your religion that it's good to serve others,
yeah,
then that's different. You know, you're just doing it to volunteer, I suppose.
Yeah. And let's do this. How about this?
And I think we know who I'm talking about.
I feel empathetic about that whole help me get into heaven thing. Not empathetic, sympathetic. Mm. And the reason that I do is because if you are doing that, you're just operating out of fear.
Mm-hmm. That you won't get in.
I think selfishness in general is operation out of fear. Fear of scarcity in the future. Fear of pain in the future. Fear of...
not knowing the future. Uncertainty.
Uncertainty, right? And so that's what drives selfish behavior. That's what drives hoarding. That's what drives what you're talking about, reward-seeking behavior, because of fear. Operating from a place of insecurity. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to go to hell. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's something I did in the past or I just bought that, what I was taught about original sin bullshit. I don't know what it is, but like I'm literally afraid that I'm going to go to a lake of fire and burn forever.
Yeah, and I don't think we even know anybody or no one in my current life that thinks that way. Or maybe they did at one point and it's just internalized now. But
right. But when you say like they're just seeking that heaven reward, right? I mean, I think it's like, yeah, but there's two sides to that coin. Right. One of them is the reward seeking behavior. But I sort of feel like any reward seeking behavior is done in with the understanding, the undertone of fear of the opposite, fear of missing out on that.
Well, I don't think you can get away from fear. Fear can either be healthy or all encompassing, you know, paralytic. It paralyzes you. So it's just how you use the fear, I think, is important.
Well, I think this here. I think what we were talking about pure altruism, these people who do things and don't care if anyone ever finds out, right? Mm-hmm. You do an act, you don't even think about whether anyone will ever find out. And you're comfortable with it. That is done from a position of strength. That is done without fear. That is done from a really self-secure position. I think about insecure people. Like, you know, like we're watching Seinfeld, and I can just tell you, George would never do one of these things without calling it out immediately in the loudest and grandest way possible because he's like the most insecure
person.
Super
neurotic.
Oh, he's so – every little thing he is
– which is why he's a funny character.
Yeah, and it's humorous in the show, but it's sad in real life when you run into people who – they do that. They're operating from a position of weakness and insecurity and fear from everything that they do. And I think that might rob them from the ability to be purely altruistic.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. You mentioned empathy and sympathy. Tell me how you differentiate between those two, because this is a sticky point for me.
Empathy meaning I can identify with that person in the truest sense of the form, like sort of like in a first person, where sympathy is like I feel bad for them.
Perfect. That's correct. Yeah. I like to use empathy for me moves you towards action with compassion. Sympathy is I just feel sorry for somebody. So you see the dog running across the highway. Having sympathy is as you drive by that dog, oh, that poor dog's going to get hit. Empathy is you start to pull over to try to take action. That's how I define it.
I like that. I think I like that.
I bring this up because it ties – a lot of my thoughts loosely come from Ayn Rand, the famous philosopher, Russian-born philosopher who came over here and wrote some of the – two of her books are still in the top 10 most bought books and most popular books of all time in America, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. she rejected the idea of altruism altogether. Now, this comes from her very specific life experience of the Russian communist government coming in and taking away her father's pharmacy business and making their whole family destitute, all in the good to serve the greater whole and be altruistic. But she says the idea that self-sacrifice should be the basis of morality is immoral in and of itself. Trying to only help others who are less advantaged is immoral if that's the basis for a society, is what she believed. But she defined selfish as concerned with your own interests. So a trial attorney is not selfish if she spends time getting better at debate and argumentation, reading books, becoming the best trial attorney you can become, because then when she goes to perform her craft, she serves her clients better. She viewed that more effective than just giving away your services pro bono.
Okay.
I think it's – I mean, I can see where she came at that because of her life experience, you know, and I do think that there is –
collectivism is literally, they could just call it altruism, self-sacrifice for the good of the whole.
Right. But when you say that being altruistic, expand on what she believed about when being truly like selflessly altruistic is immoral. Why?
She doesn't believe that someone can be selfless. Period. Especially,
I think that's such a cynical.
Again, I'm not saying I advocate the whole philosophy, but based on her life experience, where a government says we're in it for the whole is greater than each individual part. We will kill individual parts if it's not good in helping the whole. We just haven't experienced that in the U.S.
No, okay.
So it's easy for us to put it down.
Yeah.
I'm
looking at this. I think the difference is when you're talking about this from a systemic or societal, operation, yet then yes, I am more in line to agree with Ayn Rand in that anytime you've got something like socialism or communism, it's just ripe for corruption and power taking and whatever. I'm thinking about this more from an individual perspective. So like, what would Ayn Rand say about Mother Teresa? Like that, No, she wasn't truly altruistic. She had some ulterior motive that was immoral in the way that she lived because why?
No, she wasn't against kindness, compassion, goodwill, or helping others, but she saw those things different as altruism. Her whole point is from a political structural formation, so like super state macro structures.
So it's really hard to apply to an individual.
No, right? She would – I don't know what she would say.
Right.
Maybe she did write about her.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She's not saying people shouldn't cooperate and show mutual respect and try to give each other love and care.
Right.
She's saying when a group of people craft a political structure, formalizing altruism as a political structure.
Oh yeah,
that's a recipe for disaster.
I agree. I mean, I'll agree with that all day long.
And that she's saying that's what communism is.
Well, yes, it is. It is. If you read Karl Marx and you read what communism is, it is such a.
Sacrifice the self for the greater good.
Man, it is any person who considers themselves to be a moral, giving, you know, just person, if you read the thoughts and foundations of what communism is based on, it's really hard not to agree with it. You know what I mean? Like I also read and agreed with utilitarianism, which is a John Stuart Mill thing. And I would say both of those things are like – they're based on ideals that are good in theory and hard in practice.
And implement. So she said that a country – Ayn Rand said that a country's political structure is a reflection of the philosophy that it lives by. So that's what attracted her to the U.S., the attraction to individual sovereignty, individual rights, allowing people to pursue their self-interests on their own without the government telling them what careers to pursue or what knowledge they need to have, where they can live, etc. The problem I see with forced altruism from a government standpoint is that it removes freedom and choice.
Oh, yeah.
So it takes away all that intentionality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we don't need to keep going down this. I did think it was important to talk about because she wrote a lot about altruism, but people get it wrong. She was saying, my reading of it is forced altruism from a government or political perspective, but clearly she was not saying compassion is bad, goodwill, helping others.
I mean, it always ends in tyranny. I'll say that. And just if it's taken me a long time. And I still don't fully understand the mechanisms behind it, but I do know that forced, you know, socialism, communism always end, or in, at least in the past, it has always ended badly. It has always allowed for corruption, power grabs, dictators.
The people that run it are not equal. It's the collectivism at its nut is we're all equal. Okay, the people running the party ain't equal. Exactly. They live a totally different. They live in the walled cities, and
the
everybody else is planners. The peasants.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, the central plan.
But altruism, if we're defining it as selfless action that benefits others, then we could just call socialism and communism altruism, because that's what it's trying to achieve.
They're trying to achieve that. Yeah. The place where they break down, and now we're talking about group. You know, we're talking about political structures, right? And and economic structures. The place where they break down is when you end up with inefficiencies in the system that cause scarcity. And now, how do you equally divide scarcity and starvation and famine? And how do you equally divide that among everyone? And responsibility for getting in this situation in the first place, right? So, I mean, there are people who explain this much better. And you can just, you know, if you doubt this about communism and socialism, I think just
read one book. Read F.A. Hayek's The Road to Serfdom.
Okay. There you go. Do that. It just happens over and over again. And what I'd say is, like, everything's tries to be centrally planned to maintain that equality that you're talking about, right? So, like, well, the only way that we can all actually be equal is if we centrally plan production and consumption.
People telling everyone what to do.
Here's what you do for work. Here's what you produce. Here's what you can consume. And we'll all do it equally, right?
Except us.
except don't mind me. I'm behind the curtain. But, yeah, then it breaks down because you get these crazy inefficiencies because it's a very inefficient economic system to determine from a central point what gets produced and then therefore what gets consumed, and you end up with gluts of things that get produced that shouldn't have been. You end up with dearths of things that should have been produced that never did, and then everybody ends up in a bad situation, and then things fall apart from there, and then none of the tenets that started the socialism or communism exist at the end. Instead, it's just tyranny and dictatorship and death and horrible things. So I see why Ayn Rand is like, oh, communism and socialism, there you can't have an altruistic group
structure.
All right, here maybe I'll push against that then. If you just read the tenets, the ideals behind these things, if you read Karl Marx, it is very like idealistic and altruistic and selfless at its theoretical level. Right? It breaks down in practice. So here's what I would say. If you had some ultra efficient way of doing it, right? And this is what the technologists will say. And now here we go, right? Like we're talking about, now they're saying we can do this today. We weren't able to centrally plan in the past, but now we've got technology that will allow us to do it. So we're going to give it a go again. I mean, this is the China argument with what they're trying to do with their central bank digital currency and whatnot. So here, I'll make this argument. I'll play devil's advocate. If we had a pure technology that could remove the two-tier class system where there are no human central planners, right? There isn't that second class that is exempted, and everyone is forced to be a part of this communistic or socialist.
I'll stick with your mind experiment, right? Your thought experiment.
And there's a perfect algorithm that directs the production and consumption so that everyone is truly equal in those things. Then, okay, now, is that not a real an actual altruistic system?
Is it an altruism, or does that make altruism non-existent?
Yeah, yeah.
Not needed.
Okay, okay, yes, yes. You know? I think this is great. I like this thought experiment because now we're separating two things. We're separating result of the past of socialistic and communistic systems, you know, which has always been bad. Now we're doing a theoretical where it ends up good, right? Mm-hmm. So it ends up good, but it was forced good or planned good. So you were born into this system where altruism was automatic, right? Like everyone was equal. It was just all you ever knew. You'd never made a choice for self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice was built in for you by the system that you live in.
Right. It was Brave New World.
Is everybody that altruism?
No. Everybody wakes up and takes their soma and drugs themselves to just perpetuate the motion of the system. For me, altruism, choice has to exist. And you have to choose to do it. If there's no choice, to me, then it's not altruism. Actually, choice is paramount for me among most moral, philosophical, or ethical decisions someone's faced with. If there's actually no choice, then you're an automaton.
It reminds me a little bit of – I'm envisioning this culture where it's been running for over a generation. Everyone is born into it, and everyone is truly equal from their production and consumption and everything. They're just equal. They don't know anything else, right? They don't even know to try to break out of the system or strive for more than other people.
Well, because the system would have had to wipe away the past.
Yeah. So there isn't even a
historical.
It's not even a thought in their mind, right? And so you know where this is going. I don't know if you know. It's making me think of the movie The Invention of Lying, right? Where nobody was aware that they could lie. And so then one person just had this thought enter their mind. Wait a minute. I could say something that's not true.
That's funny.
And manipulate everyone around me. It makes me think that these – so like if an entire generation were born into this, let's say it was on some continent where they were locked there so there were no outsiders. Everyone was born into this. Would someone just have an idea one day like, I want more than all these other people? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I'm going to
– Or just I want to be –
Sabotage.
I want to be different. Not even more. Just I don't want to do this mundane manila envelope life. I want to try something new.
Well, I want to strive for more, right? I guess that would be the – and here's what I'll say.
Or yes, strive for less.
I don't – if I do this thought experiment, I don't – yes, I want to strive for – I want to do less. If I do this thought experiment, I don't think you could ever get to, even if you had a perfect algorithm, technology running it, you could, because I think it is our nature to want more. You know what I mean? It is in our nature to strive for more, to
be
ambitious, to whatever. You know what I mean? Because I think if I'm doing that thought experiment, I would say.
Well, even if you're a drug addict and you're not ambitious, you want more drugs.
Right. Right.
So I'm saying
that's not necessarily what I mean. I don't mean I want to consume more. I think that we genuinely strive to make ourselves
to be productive.
Better, to be productive, to and well, both, you know. And like you would say, okay, I'm doing exactly the equal amount of work that everyone else is doing, right? Like it would be nice if I could just do a little less than everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
So either way, I think it's in our nature to strive to break out of that. You were saying like, oh, and people would just strive to be different. I think in that system, that I'm talking about, or at least in this thought experiment, people could be different. You could express yourself in different ways and listen to different music and whatever, right? You still have all this quote unquote difference between us. I'm talking purely production and consumption.
Economic.
Yeah.
Equality.
We would be equal, yeah.
But again, to me, that just moots all the other differences.
I don't know if it does. I don't know. Anyway, it's an interesting thought experiment. So that would be my response to Ayn Rand is I think you the system that she's talking about is not altruistic and it ends up horrible, but it's based on the inefficiencies that exist. If there was a perfect technology, then it would operate from a place that would mimic altruism, but yes, I like what you're saying about there needs to be individual choice for
and I
something
think that's,
to be altruistic.
And people that don't like her, I think don't read her, just like most people. Contact theory. People should look up contact theory. It's the idea that if you disagree with something, get in contact with it. to some degree. And there's so many studies that show, especially around political extremism, the most extreme people are those that have never interacted with the people that they hate so much, ever. Never seen, never been around, are thousands of miles away. And then when you do that and you expose that intimacy and that vulnerability, things shift. And I think people naturally know that somewhere in their head, so they need to stay away. And then populistic political leaders know this as well, and they use that to fan shit.
I like that.
People just
– I really like
that. For me, with her, it just goes back to her lived experience of what the government, who you're supposed to look to trust and to – you know, to have the best interest, if you will, of its citizens out, literally ripped away a very successful business, livelihood, sense of purpose, sense of spirit, financial interest, and her entire family became destitute and a bunch of her family members died. I can see why she's got some pretty strong views on political structures and altruism and that.
Yeah.
And for people that put her stuff down without reading it, they're just doing themselves a disservice.
Oh, I'll agree with that 100%. I'll agree with that 100%. I mean, I think everything that she said is very powerful. I think the ultimate or the modern day equivalent, if you want to go down the rabbit hole, is to look at the United States historical system. Who knows where we're going? But the United States historical democracy, which values individual rights and freedoms over the collective, versus what's happening in China from a paternalistic state right now, where it is truly a communistic mindset that is run by a father government, you know, father figure government.
Yeah, he got rid of presidential term limits 2 years ago. He altered the Constitution, and it's not just whoever's running the country now. This is just how it goes, and that's accepted because the person who runs the ship there isn't viewed as a god, but they're viewed as infallible. Like, they can change the Constitution. So he – I think Jing is the last name, I believe. I can't remember his last name. But he added a section to the Constitution basically called, like, his thoughts. I mean, so imagine that. Imagine if Biden was like, you know what? I'm going to add a section to the U.S. Constitution called Biden's Thoughts.
Xi Jinping.
Yeah, Jinping. Anyway, so these systems of selfless action that benefit others, as soon as that's mandated, that removes the idea of altruism for me.
Oh, absolutely. I'll agree with you 100%. I mean, tying back the whole the Chinese thing, the whole – like they are just – they think that the system that they have is good for it's the best thing.
Well, yeah,
for
that's
the greater
their values.
Good.
They have different values than us, and I'm fine with that. Right. I don't think that they should have our values.
Right, and they're fine with their system being the one who forces certain sacrifices on the individuals because they believe it is for the greater good.
They view choice very differently than we do.
They view choice, yeah.
But I view our country as moving towards that direction, but they also are moving a little towards ours. So that's interesting. That's not related to altruism, is you've just got this blending of value systems, and who knows where it's going to end up.
You know where it goes to ultimately is centralization versus decentralization.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. And so it's sovereignty of the individual versus sovereignty of a centralized authority over your decisions, your choices, your freedoms, your individual day-to-day. That's crazy to think about. And I'll agree. I think at the end I'll agree. In order for an act to be truly altruistic, it needs to come from a human, an individual. The choice needs to be decentralized down to an individual. And any action that is forced upon individuals by a group or a mechanism or a system you know, it's interesting. If you looked at it from a third party as like, well, they're a superorganism, and that superorganism made that decision at a higher level than that individual person, which is a sub piece of the superorganism. But we're humans and we experience life at an individual level, right? There's probably a collective conscience. I'm a believer that we're all connected in some way and we're all working together in ways that we don't understand. But I think you need to have the sovereignty as an individual to make decisions, and those decisions that you make can or can go with or can go against the ideas that we're talking about now with altruism, and you need to own it.
Yeah, and I think people could throw religion and say, well, religion kind of forces you, or at least strongly influences you, to have all these thoughts. And then I eventually, I immediately go back to choice and say, whoa, whoa, whoa. At least in this country, you can, being in a religion is a choice. Even if you're as a kid, eventually you can choose to not be in that religion. But that's not the case around the world.
Oh, yeah. That's a scary thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But first of all, so in a country where there's choice, you're not being forced to stay in any organized group that has supernatural beliefs. That's your choice to stay and believe those things. So to me, that's okay then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I heard an argument recently around a dinner table that was talking about morality is all based on, like, it's all originates from religion. And I think that kind of falls into what we're talking about here. It's like, all right, so if we're going to talk about altruism and values in terms of groups, and we were talking about it with governments, like, you know, governments and political structures and economic structures, what about with religions, right? So if you are, and this kind of goes full circle to your whole, if you do something just because of the expectation of going to heaven, is it truly altruistic? And then I would say, then the next question, as we're relating this to religious structures and organizations, is if you're doing it not because of the individual expectation of going to heaven, but because of the group mandated, and we're talking about the religion you belong to, expectations and pressures, you know, peer pressures, is it altruistic? So here's an example. You are a member of some religious group and you go on a service trip, right? Not out of choice, because that's what happens when you come of age at this age. And it is all organized by that church and it is paid for by that church. You go do these things, you know, it takes your time, takes your effort, but you are there with your, you know, community members, and it was predestined, predetermined that that was going to happen when you reached an age. Is that altruistic?
I mean, I don't view it that way. Or what the Mormons do, you know, you have to go door knock for a while, trying to bring people in and be a missionary. And again, that's just part of the structure with you're choosing to live within. And so if you want to stay within that structure, you have to do those things. So there's less choice there.
Yeah. I like this because it's ultimately with – if you're in the U.S. and you're part of a religion, you do have a choice. You could leave that religion theoretically. Maybe at great sacrifice.
Yeah, but you can without death.
But without death, yeah. And so I guess we're coming down to it's either more or less altruistic based on degree of freedom of choice.
Yes, there. That's a good way to frame it. Yeah, I really like that. What else do you have? We have one more unit we haven't talked about, okay. The family unit.
Okay. Let's do it.
Marin, you knocked your brother down. Get over there and pick him up. Pick him up and help him out. Is that altruism?
No, no.
Okay.
No.
So how does a father and mother create the value of altruism in their kids without forcing it as a rule and without talking about their own altruistic acts because they don't want to publicize them?
If you figure that out, please let me know. Because it's funny because I...
What's altruism, Dad? I can't talk about it. I can't show you how to do it. And I can't force you to do it. But it's real.
Yeah. I just have to try to get you to come to that realization on your own.
You see what I mean? Yeah. That's an interesting way to paint it.
It's so funny because as we've been punishing our children recently, I've been pulling them aside and being like, you got to understand, I'm just trying to make you a good adult. And they're just like, what?
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks.
They're like, yeah. And I'm like, look, there are here, what did I say to Marin? I think I said it to Marin because I think she's coming of the age where she can understand it. I said something like, look, there are people who operate from a position of fear and all they do is take and everything is about themselves and they are sad and they feel bad all the time. Mm-hmm. And their lives are unhappy. And I was like, and I want you to live a life that is the opposite of that. I want you to feel secure, safe, happy, and I want you to act accordingly, right? Doing good and being good to others will come easy if you come from a place of security, happiness, you know, et cetera. And I'm like, I'm just trying to teach you to be an adult who can live that way. And I think she was, you know, obviously she gets the gist
a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a decades of experience that she's going to have to get to fully understand what I'm saying to her. But
would you rather have an altruistic kid or an outwardly successful kid?
Oh, altruistic. 100%.
Nice.
Yeah. And here's why I'll say that. I believe that you can have very successful children. Let's even just talk about, you can be a very successful person and be deeply unhappy.
Oh, yeah. We know people that way.
Right.
And you can be rich and be deeply unhappy.
Yes, especially by like traditional measures. And if I stick by what I've said in the past, I think I've said it on Life Lab, but it is that when you die and you look back on your life, it's just a series of how you felt. That's it. How did you feel throughout your life?
That,
your emotions.
The accumulation of your emotional experiences.
Yeah, and none of that I mean, that's the only treasure that you have on your deathbed.
Well, that's the whole point of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
That's
pictures,
it.
Memories, stories, you know. This is so good. This is so good. I'll tie this. I was watching it was hilarious. I don't know how this came across my YouTube feed, but some guy who was an arm wrestler and it showed his best moments. And after he won like the whatever, some big thing, maybe it was the Hall of Fame, he literally said, look, a lot of people can get success from having money, from having things. He goes, you know what this sport has given me? He's like, it's given me feelings. And he's like, this is the best feeling I think I've ever had. And he's like, and I will treasure this moment forever.
Mm, nice.
And I was just like, wow, that is like such a moment of realization that I think a lot of people never come to. They're always, you know, they chase. We all chase things. But anyway, I think if you operate from that understanding, here's the thing. If you operate from that understanding, right? Like you have good emotions. You're operating from a position of strength, not of fear. And you tend to make more altruistic choices because of that, I would think. Would you agree?
I mean, let's take it to the full extreme. Nazis, their whole program was operate from a position of strength. What they viewed as what they were doing as.
No.
But I'm saying, dude, I'm playing devil's advocate for you. They 100% believe they were operating from strength. They were going to create the thousand-year Reich. They were
That's like
doing
a bully being
right.
like, I'm operating from a position of strength.
I'm not agreeing
bullshit.
With it.
Right.
I'm just saying that that's
yeah. Well, here's what I'll say. As a third party and anybody looking back on history or somebody watching a bully on a playground being like, hitting a little kid and being like, look at me, I'm operating from a position of strength. No, you're not. You're operating from insecurity and fear. So no, I reject that immediately. And what I'll say is this. I do believe operating from a position of security and whatever you want to say.
U.S. policy, U.S. military policy, U.S. foreign policy. The idea that we have to have military bases. We're the only country in the world that has 100 plus military bases scattered throughout
the bully of the world.
Well,
this
there
is
you
not
go.
From
I just
a position,
wanted to make sure you were very clear on that.
Yeah, this is not, no, that's
so
this is easy.
America's just scared to lose its place and its resources.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Any country is.
Yeah, it's not even a question. Yeah, and we put in measures to maintain our control.
So that's the point.
That's fear.
Think about it. Any political system we've created as humans, no matter the values that form its foundation, whether it's individualism or altruism, they all lead to the fear that somebody's going to take away what we've built.
Yep.
We can't get away from the fear is my point. Period.
And let's go stoic. If you are trying to maintain control, right? That is fear. You're doing that out of fear.
Well, good, man.
What I would say is if you can be in a position of strength and not have to do all that to try to maintain control and all that, I think you'll probably make more altruistic decisions.
The individual level where there's choice involved.
Yes.
And you're not advertising it.
Yes. Yes. You know, one of the things that I think if I go back and look when it was talking about that, pure altruism. It says helping someone else, even when it is risky, without any reward. And that, even when it is risky part, is I think what I'm talking about, operating from a place without fear. You have to be willing to take risk. And you're more,
is being vulnerable a risk?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a component of risk. I don't want to go down this rabbit mm-hmm. hole. It's a component of risk. Yes.
Life is a risk.
Yeah.
Every you driving back to your house is a risk.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the risk is made up of two of, I'm not going to go down this. Yes. But yes, vulnerability,
intensity
is a
and impact.
Well, it's likelihood and impact, right? Mm-hmm. And then you break that down into the likelihood piece is how vulnerable are you and how often does whatever event occur where the vulnerability could be exposed. Mm. Okay. Well, let's get off of this.
Well, that's Dave's expertise.
Yeah.
I think it's good to hear that. Well, what else do you have? I got nothing else.
That's it, man. Let's do some change challenges.
Yeah, what do you got?
Go hold a door for someone at a coffee shop.
And then announce it. I'm holding this door for this person.
No, okay. So since you said announce it, I'll say the opposite.
I was kidding.
I know you were. I know. I was kidding too. My change challenge is going to be do a tiny altruistic act like leaving the last donut for someone and make sure – do something that is – it doesn't have to be any bigger than that. But make sure that you don't announce it and no one ever knows it.
Perfect.
And take note of how that makes you feel. Take note of whether you desire for it to be known or not, right? And I'll even say this. The scale of the altruistic act, the bigger it gets and the harder it is for you, the more you have to – more energy you have to dedicate and the more you have to sacrifice for it, the more you will desire for other people to know that you did mm-hmm. it. And just note that.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Do a simple chart. So I was going to write down – I actually wrote down while he was saying that. Do an action that benefits someone else and tell no one. So that's exactly what Dave described. So our change challenge was going to be the same. So I'll add a separate one. Two simple columns, selfless service, self-service. Go through the formal acts, organizations, experiences that you do on a regular basis already. And simply check a mark in one of those columns. Is this selfless service or is it self-service? Or maybe it's both. And just go through that and take a look at where your tick marks are and reflect on that.
Well, I got to say, we were all over the place on this one. I didn't have – I don't think when we started talking about this, I realized the breadth of ground that altruism can cover.
Yeah. We started at the individual level talking about – first of all, we anchored it in choice. We eventually got to anchoring it in choice and that there are degrees of altruism based on whether or not choice is available
and intention.
To it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we started at the individual level and then we ratcheted it way up to the macro level of political structures. Yep. But then we brought it back down to a family unit and organizational life, really.
Yep.
But we talked about key things, religions. Key figures and how they think about it and how people misrepresent their ideas on it. We talked about the happiness that one can get from altruism, and that's okay. That can still be an altruistic action if it makes you feel good, if your intentionality is pure, right?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. 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 At some point, you just got to give yourself the benefit of the doubt,
yeah.
man. You know, if you go out and you do good – and it's from a pure –
from the right place.
You know.
Yeah. That's you know, the point.
That's
only
the point.
You know.
You know.
Yeah. You have to come and have that conversation with your inner voice and self, and only you can have that conversation. And then you have to be willing to accept the judgment of others or pull a Pujols and just say, hey, this isn't the time to talk about
yeah.
these acts that I'm doing. And it can be awkward and weird, but man – that's a principle-driven life.
Or you have to be willing to accept it going unnoticed.
And that's even harder.
And
that's probably
the
hardest
one
of all.
Yeah. So with that said, get out there.
Yeah, get out there and experiment with life.